Water. It is one of the most important resources, and in the desert Southwest, it's becoming more scarce as climate change makes it hotter and drier. The World Resources Institute recently compiled a scale of water stress, or how close an area is to draining its annual water stores in a typical year. What may surprise you is how Nevada fared in that list. Rutger Hofsey is an associate with the World Resources Institute. Rutger, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So before we get to Nevada's ranking, how was this water risk atlas compiled? What kind of data did it use? And are we talking about groundwater, water sources, or all of the above?
Yeah, thank you. This is a project that ran for almost 3 years, and it's a collaboration between the World Resource Institute and various data providers. So we partnered with a university in the Netherlands called the University of Utrecht, and they built a global hydrological model, which means a water model, to calculate a wide variety of different water-related risk metrics. And the water risk score that you're seeing right now is one of them.
And so what was the impetus for doing all of this research? You said it's been going on since 2011. Was it climate change that kind of pushed it forward or something else? What started it?
Yeah, what started was that if you compare water to, for example, climate change and CO2, is that CO2, you can relatively easy set ambitious targets for CO2. You can just say as a business, for example, I want to reduce my CO2 emissions across my entire supply chain. For water, it's a lot more difficult because where do you start? If you say like, I want to be more efficient with water and apply water efficiency across my entire supply chain, that is not the best approach. Water is a very local issue, and it matters a lot where you're sourcing your material from, where your factory is located, and where your markets are. So there was a big demand for making water-related risk information much more accessible. It can be quite daunting, a bit overwhelming for governments and companies to use these kind of information. So we take complex water-related data out of the scientific universities and we process it into something that companies and governments can easily understand and make a decision relevant.
Country to country, the United States ranked 71st out of 189 countries and low to medium on the stress scale. But within the U.S., there are a lot of differences. Can you talk about why that is?
Yeah, sure. Maybe taking one step back, it's important to tell the listeners what exactly we looked at. So we looked at an indicator that's called baseline water stress. And baseline water stress is your available water supplies in the relationship to your withdrawals. And if you withdraw more than 80% of your available supplies, you are categorized as extremely high water stress. And when you're categorized as extremely high water stress, what it means that if there is a drought, there is a high probability that you will not be able to satisfy all the water demands. And water demands can come from agriculture, industries, cities, and the like. So this baseline water stress is really a measure of competition for water. And that's where that's what we calculated. And we looked for the United States, for the different states within the United States. And we found some interesting results.
Now, with the Southwest United States, it naturally has an arid climate, and so it naturally fared worse than some other states. But even so, there were a lot of differences in this region. New Mexico, for instance, was the only state in the extremely high water stress category, which that's on the same page with the likes of United Arab Emirates, which was the 10th most stressed country in the world. Nevada, on the other hand, was in the medium to high category, along with much wetter states like Kansas, Rhode Island, and some other states. So what can you tell me about how Nevada fared?
Yeah, so it's important to distinguish between water stress and aridity. And we, in the calculations, put aridity as almost like a separate category. Mm-hmm. So people that live in arid areas, they kind of know that the lack of precipitation and a very dry area around you will have an influence on your day-to-day life. So the effect of a drought will be different in an arid region than in a water-abundant region. So it's important to take those two things into consideration. That being said, like Nevada is a very arid and a very water managed state with a lot of infrastructure transfers, a track record of droughts, and a lot of worry and also attention to water related issues.
So, because we're a very water managed state, like you said, that's why we scored a little bit better.
So, yeah, there are several things. One is that like we took this approach globally, so I can give you some of the global numbers for Nevada specifically. I don't have them right now, but globally, approximately 70% of the water withdrawals are for irrigated agriculture, and that's huge. If you look at Nevada, for example, the biggest or a major river basin there, the Colorado River, a lot of the irrigated agriculture takes place downstream of Nevada. So that will not have an influence on the water stress levels in Nevada, which is the classic upstream downstream relationship where you use some of the water upstream, it will have an effect on the irrigated agriculture downstream.
Interesting. I'm sure that information might surprise some people. Of course, we have been facing drought for a long time. So I'm just wondering, did some of the states surprise you in terms of how they fared on this list?
I think some of them did, but it's also the results are also kind of as expected. Like New Mexico, like the southwestern United States, California, those are all being high water risk. But also some of the irrigated agriculture heavy states, such as Colorado or like the Midwest, Nebraska. So no major surprises, I would say. And maybe what's good to emphasize as well is that how we frame it is that water stress is used as a proxy. So it's an indication of risk. However, you can, using good water management, you can manage your way out of a water stress situation. So it's not your destiny. And that's the information that is not available at a global scale, but much more at a local level. Like how well is the reservoir managed? What is there a plan in place when there's a drought? Who is the first that will not get water from a tap, or is that the agriculture that will leave certain lands fallow? Things like that are crucially important.
Since this was research done on a global scale, how do you think the US did overall?
United States has a big advantage in when it comes to data availability. And I think lots of the water-related stress or risks are relatively well understood in the United States. For example, there's great data on agriculture. There's great data on rainfall levels. There is like stream gauges, and a lot of places in the world that data is not available. So I think in our global model, for example, the United States is relatively well represented because some of the local measured data can help the model to perform better. And large areas of Africa, Latin America, that's not the case. So the model uncertainty there is much bigger. So I think that's the big difference of the United States compared to some of the other regions in the world.
Have politicians reached out to you to use this research to create legislation and policy?
It did. One of the countries that surprised us was Belgium in Europe, where the water stress level was high, and it's not one of the usual suspects. And after that, the results were displayed on the local news or the national news, which is still pretty local in Europe, in Belgium. And the water authorities did a deep dive and concluded that, in fact, it is a problem. The river Meuse is very vulnerable to droughts, and it triggered a discussion that is also now in the news in the Netherlands, which is my own country. So I think there's the link, and hopefully the politicians will act based on that information.
Well, where do you think we stand to make the most improvements?
Again, like the United States, it's so big that you have different climates and different different causes of the problem. per state. So as again, like water related risks are a local issue. So it depends per state, but we recommend like three things. One is look at irrigated agriculture. As said before, 70% of the global withdrawals are for irrigated agriculture. And moreover, 1/3 of the crop is lost between the farm and fork, which means that there is a lot of like food loss and waste. And that's a relatively low hanging fruit to mm-hmm. focus on that. The irrigated efficiency, irrigation efficiency is another thing that is high on the list of recipes to mitigate this water related risk. And then in the more arid regions, maybe Nevada is one of them, people should think of, or what, like we recommend that people should think of wastewater not as a waste, but as used water, and that can be a resource again. So there are good examples, for example, Singapore and Namibia. They reuse some of their wastewater that we should call used water and use it in a circular manner. And then the third is water supply varies from year to year. But also within a year. So you have a dry and a wet season. And we should really think of watersheds as sponges. So when there is a surplus of water, you let the sponge soak up water that you can then use in terms of droughts. And like reservoirs, like the old school concrete structures, they can help to have the watershed act like a sponge. But there is also a lot of research about green infrastructure. So how can you leverage wetlands or forests or groundwater, recharge aquifers for groundwater? And it's really, the solution is probably that you pick the right tools from the toolbox, and the toolbox contains both gray and green infrastructure. So both the concrete dams, but also the wetlands and the forests and the groundwater.
I think that it's pretty well understood here in the desert that climate change is going to mean a hotter climate and less water. So I'm wondering if going forward, as you continue this research, if you envision, you know, the map getting redder, as it were, if you're looking at it as time goes on.
Yeah, we do. So specifically for Las Vegas, the future does not look very good. In the year 2040, in a business as usual scenario, we expect that water supply will drop by 20%. And that will have a major effect on the risk of having not enough water to satisfy all the water demand. So I think there are a lot of challenges ahead. And our online tool, we also run climate models. So you can look into the future, 2030, 2040, 2050. Mm-hmm. And then using different scenarios for climate, but also socioeconomic change. And for example, between 1960 and 2014, like the world is using 2.5 times more water for irrigated agriculture, domestic and industries. So the socioeconomic change is the major driver for water related risk, and climate change can make it worse in certain places. And it will also have an effect on the variability and extreme weather event. So it's all interlinked, but socioeconomic change is a big one.
Going forward, what should the message be? What's some solutions that people should focus on?
Yeah, sure. So the lowest hanging fruit is this irrigated agriculture. We lose 1/3 between the farm and the fork. Second is think of used water instead of like wastewater. And then the third one is think of sponges. So both using green and gray infrastructure.
Rutger Hofsky is an associate with the World Research Institute. He joined us today by Skype from Amsterdam. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.